The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hello and welcome to this Stockhead podcast. I'm your host, Peter Strachan. Western Australia's Bryah Basin has received a lot of exploration attention over recent years. Way back in the day, Esmeralda discovered the Horseshoe Lights gold and copper deposit, and then more recently, Sandfire shined a big light on the region with its high-grade De Grussa and Monty VMS copper and gold deposits. Today, we're pleased to welcome Neil Marsden to Stockhead. Now, Neil is the Managing Director of Bryah Resources, which, as the name suggests, has a large strategic position in the basin. So welcome, Neil. Can you give us a potted history of Bryah's involvement in exploration in the region?
Yes, good morning, Peter. Bryah Resources has been listed on the ASX for just over 3 years now, and we formed ourselves back in 2017 with a portfolio of ground. Our flagship project is up in the Bryah Basin, as you mentioned. We started off with about 700 square k's of ground there. We've been able to actually acquire additional ground, and we're sitting at just under 1,200 square k's of ground or mineral rights under our tenure. And basically, yes, the thing that appealed to me and the team that put this together was the opportunity to find another De Grussa style or Horseshoe Light style copper gold deposit in the area. I previously had been involved with a number of companies on Horseshoe Lights when it was in production back in the late 80s and early 90s and subsequent to that. And I always thought it was an amazing deposit. Started as a gold mine with a supergene copper cap sitting beneath the gold zone, and then a massive sulfide zone below that, which was mined, and it was a very rich gold deposit, very similar to the open pit at Sandfire's De Grussa. So when Sandfire made their discovery in 2009 at De Grussa, they were actually testing a gold anomaly. And as they drilled a bit deeper, they got into some massive sulfides, and the rest is pretty much history there. So we saw that there was certainly synergies in the area with a lot of the area of ground we had under our control. And so that's what we've formed the company on, and that's still our primary focus.
So, Neil, that's right. The geology there makes geologists salivate. It's all very exciting. Right. And you've been doing quite a bit of geochemistry and then following up with geophysics and structural work. How's that been going in driving your focus?
Yeah, Peter, when we first got hold of the ground back in 2017, I got a geologist who had done some work up in that area for a number of companies, including working for myself earlier, a guy named Michael Outhwaite from Model Earth. And he's a very competent geologist. He was pivotal in Breaker Resources' discovery of their deposit at Bombera. And Michael went up in 2017 before we actually did the IPO, and came back and was glowing in his descriptions of the potential of the area. And his advice to us was very much about, well, we've got a large package of ground here. Let's try and put 80% of our funds into 20% or less of the ground. So let's develop an exploration strategy around finding these Horseshoe Lights style deposits. That's what we're looking for. Horseshoe Lights has got a fairly large alteration cell and geochemical footprint from the work that was done before the mine was opened up in the 80s. And so we knew that if we went in there and did some good sound soil geochemistry, looking at very critical pathfinder minerals, if we picked up some anomalism there, that combined with some good geophysics, should lead us to hopefully a discovery. So we certainly hit the ground with a 500 by 500 meter grid sampling program over as much of the area as we could. And fortunately, we got a significant antimony, arsenic, selenium anomaly at an area called Windalar. We went back and did some more sampling to confirm that, which it was. And we've been targeting in on that ever since with some interesting results to date.
So, Neil, I'll come back to that in a minute. But while you were there, and I think pre your arrival in the basin, others had found a shallow, quite high grades of manganese in the area. Now, I know that the companies had an offer of $5 million for those manganese assets, which the board is currently considering. But can you tell us a little bit about the use of manganese and its current market outlook, which might influence Bryah's decision on what to do with those assets?
Yes, Peter, as I've told story to a lot of people in the past, I was up on site a week after we listed and was standing on the Horseshoe Range, which is part of our tenure, and just trying to get a mobile phone signal and saw some dust and commotion not far away, which was the Horseshoe Flats being opened up. That's a shallow manganese deposit, which traditionally all the manganese in the Bryah Basin has been pretty much within the Horseshoe Range. As you say, supergene, high-grade material at the surface, pretty much close to the top of the range, and then it's a lot of it's remobilized down slope to become secondary mineralization, and that's what the fellows at Horseshoe Flats were mining. So it made us think, well, if someone can open up a small pit there and make some good money, perhaps we should be having a look at this. So we embarked on a bit of reconnaissance work. Was able to pick up the old Horseshoe South manganese mine, which had been in operation with Mineral Resources from 2008 to 2011, and started to actually identify that there was a lot more manganese floating around in the area than perhaps a lot of people had actually fully understood. And not long after we put out some results on just soil sampling or rock chip sampling, we got a phone call from OM Holdings, who are a very big manganese player. Yeah. They are active in the region doing, or globally, they're one of the biggest players for manganese. And so we were able to establish a joint venture with them.
Yeah, I think they're in the Northern Territory as well, aren't they?
That's Northern right. They've got the Butu, yeah, they've got the Butu Creek running at the moment. That's on a bit of a... short timetable for running out of in-situ ore. So I know they'll be running a tailings retreatment project for a while after that. But so they're looking, I don't think it's any secret, they're looking at sort of finding new sources of manganese ore out of Australia to replace what's coming out of Butu Creek in the future. So
and also providing because a lot of the world's manganese comes from South Africa, so there's a political risk with that. And because manganese is used very much in construction steel manufacturing, isn't it?
Yes, manganese is very much important and essential element in steel production. You can't actually make steel without using manganese, and 90-odd% of manganese goes into steel production. That's the market that drives the pricing on manganese ore globally. Although it's got lots of niche applications, and certainly it's got a lot of future in the energy storage space as well, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, but the market is quite obtuse and opaque, I should say. And what's been happening to the price over the last 12 or 18 months?
Look, it's been knocked around quite a bit, apart from a bit of a spike after or during COVID last year when South African mines were shut down for about 2 months. And so there was a bit of a flurry around the outlook on sort of supply. It's been pretty flat apart from that. The prices have come off. 2017-18, there was a big spike and it was jumping up, trading around $7, $8 per dry metric ton unit. It's pulled back. I think OM in their last quarterly report was saying that 44% manganese landed in China was selling for about $4.21 per dry metric ton unit. So, and we're seeing iron ore demand has been driven by a few factors, but global steel production continues to increase. That's trickling down into the ferroalloys, the manganese alloys market as well at the moment, but it hasn't got down to driving the manganese ore price There's a big stockpile of material sitting in China at the moment. And so, you know, the outlook for manganese, I suppose, in the longer term is that it'll sit around a $5 per dry metric ton unit, US dollars, that is.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing that at the moment. So I think there'll be a little bit of time required before prices improve a bit.
Yeah. So, Neil, have you been able, has Briar been able to put a resource number around the mineralization you've outlined so far?
Not yet, Peter. We've got some drilling results. We've got all the drilling results from the RC drilling we did last year into our database. We've just been doing some diamond drilling. We've just got some SG work and work around that side of things to allow us to wrap up some mineral resource estimates. So we can expect to see those in the next few weeks or month or so.
Yeah. And you've also done some beneficiation work where you've been able to sort of get it up to from the sort of in situ grades in the mid to high 30s, up to a saleable grade.
Yeah, look, we've done, OM did some initial work on some RC samples, and also we did some ore sorting test work on some of the manganese stockpiles, which are on the old Horseshoe South mine. The ore sorting brought material up, in varying ranges. But look, we know from Mineral Resources' previous operations, they were running a DMS plant, dense media separation plant, on Horseshoe South. They seem to be producing a reasonably good product, and we expect that with either crushing and screening of some of the higher grade material, or with some DMS or ore sorting, producing in that 35% to 40% range is really the target.
Yeah, and that was going out via Geraldton or where?
Yeah, that was going out. Actually, MinRes were shipping out via Port Hedland, and that certainly is still an option that we're looking at going forward. Although Geraldton's a closer port, so your road haulage costs are a little bit higher. Your shipping costs coming out of Port Hedland, you usually can put stuff onto larger ships, so you save money on the seaborne freight.
Neil, the main game probably, should the company accept this current offer, it would see the company with $3 million up front and another $2 million over a subsequent 4.5 years. How would Briar plan or intend to deploy these funds over the coming years? You know, what would be your game plan for those permits?
Yeah, Peter, the major exploration effort for us will continue to be in the Briar Basin. Down at Gabanintha, we've got a small resource there at a place called Tumblegum South, and we're working with Adaman Resources, who own the Kirkalocka Gold Mine, and there's an opportunity for us to do some more drilling there to get that resource ready for mining and potentially processing through the Kirkalocka plant. So there's some work that'll need to be done on that, but I still think that our shareholders are invested in Briar for us to make a big copper gold discovery in the Briar Basin. And I think, we've got two targets which really have whetted my appetite and our investors' appetite. Windalar, as I mentioned earlier, where we've got that soil anomaly. We've drilled it with RC and air core drilling and confirmed that soil anomaly exists at depth. We plan to go back and do a lot of work there. And then over at Mount Labouchere, where we've got intervals of copper, nickel and cobalt from some drilling, which was ironically done for manganese, but have shown up these other minerals in the shallow drilling. We definitely want to go back and test that. So we've got a contractor booked to go and do an airborne drone survey, aeromagnetic survey over Mount Labouchere this month. That will give us a lot better geophysical data to sharpen up our understanding of the geology in that area before we go and finalise the positions of some drilling there. But I'm really quite excited about that potential. It's got some, it ticks some of the boxes on geology and stratigraphy. It's close to the the basin margin with the Bangamore Group, which is to the north, which is very much similar to Horseshoe Lights, which is and only about 400 or 500 meters off that basin margin, and it's also in the same sort of horizon as Aurus's Wodger and Forest copper gold deposits to the south. Mount Labish is looking quite good, but back at Windalar, we'll be putting in some deep RC holes there. We want to get a series of those holes down. The target area there is still quite large. It gives us the opportunity to put some deep RC holes down there, case those, do some downhole geophysics, so we get the best chance of finding where these deposits are. I mean, Horseshoe Lights, the main ore body there is a couple of hundred metres long. There's a lot of alteration around it. But hopefully we can find one of these similar to Grusa or Horseshoe Lights high grade deposits, and everyone will be happy.
It's a detective job, isn't it? I mean, when you look at the size of especially the Monty deposit, I mean, it's tiny in terms of physical size. So you're getting 5, 8, 10% coppers with ounces of gold with it. It's very high grade. So you have to do the sort of detective work. And I think with the Bryah Basin, there's plenty of precedents there and you're onto something, but it's going to be a bit wet there, Neil, over the next couple of weeks. So it might be a while before it dries out and you can get people and equipment onto site.
Moving drilling equipment around, that will be constrained because there's a couple of creeks we cross or need to ford. So we've got to be careful about when we do that. And that's one of the reasons we're wedging this airborne drone survey in now, because it gives us an opportunity to do a bit more planning before we commit to drilling. Yes, you've always got problems with the road access from the highway to Horseshoe Lights. It's about 70 k's of generally good quality unsealed road, but yes, you get 100 mils or more rain dumped in the area from a cyclone, and it makes or something similar. It makes things very different and different overnight.
Yeah, well, Kalgoorlie had 80 millimetres yesterday, so it might be like that. So, and you also mentioned Thumblegum, which I love the name Thumblegum, and of course that's just to the south of Dominion's old Gabanintha project, and some very high grades I've noticed there, 10 sort of grams a tonne of gold and quite a bit of copper associated with that. And Bryah's looking to monetize that project. It's a small permit, and it's a toll processing operation, which could just put a bit of dollars into the balance sheet. Is that the way the company's looking at it?
Yeah, look, it's only a 70 hectare area of ground which the deposit sits on, and we've been fortunate in the last 12 months. We've been able to generate a mineral resource there of 600,000 tonnes at 2.2 for about 42,500 ounces. That's pretty shallow, and certainly the drilling indicates there's gold and little bits of copper in that right up to the surface. There's been some historical mining there. It's pretty hard to work out the exact figures. I was looking at some historical data yesterday, and there's probably 2,000 or 3,000 tons of material was pulled out at probably around an ounce a ton from what we can discern. But yes, very similar to a lot of high grade gold deposits in the region. You've got a 1 to 2 meter zone there, which is running at almost an ounce to the ton, and then a sort of zone wider than that with 1 to whatever grams of gold beyond that. So it's shaping up quite well. It does need additional drilling, and there's a permitting exercise we have to work through. We've actually been able to achieve what is probably pretty important, and this is access to a plant. All the gold miners at the moment have got a plant are running very, very much flat out. So to actually tie up with the Adamant team on their Kirkalocka deposit and basically have a window to process material through there penciled in. That's a bonus.
Neil, that's you've got a lot on your plate over the next couple of months, 6 months certainly, and we'll wait and see what happens with the manganese assets. But I think the copper gold focus, you're going to have more than enough to think about there, and it'll be good to have that $3 million in the bank to progress with it. So thanks for coming in, and I think we're going to be watching very closely over the next 6 months, and when the waters subside in the Bryah Basin, we'll be able to get in there and see what the drilling throws up over the next 6 months or so. So once again, thanks for coming in, Neil.
Yeah, look, thanks, Peter, and thanks for your time today.